We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott Michaelo. Scott,
good morning.
Representative Marcello, the House Oversight Committee recently received testimony describing how independent monitoring promised to investors in 38 studios wasn't put in place. How would you describe the significance of that information?
Very significant for two reasons. One is it's a direct contradiction of what was in the bond private placement memo. And number two, from a practical standpoint, if there was no third-party monitoring going on, who the heck was monitoring this deal as it went through the system?
Some people think the real story of what happened with 38 Studios will never be told because a default would have triggered a more thorough investigation by the insurance company for bondholders. How do you respond?
I'm not sure that that's true. First of all, just because the payment is made doesn't mean that an investigation can't go forward. For instance, the House Oversight is doing their own investigation. The civil suit is still going on. The insurance company, I think, would have done an investigation as to, you know, how to recoup payments and whatnot. They might have looked at some issues, but I don't think it would be as extensive. But there's no linkage between paying the debt and installing an investigation. I just don't see it.
Let's go to Scott.
How much hope do you have for the civil lawsuit here that Rhode Island could recover some of this money?
I'm hopeful. I'm very confident that the attorney who's bringing the suit is very qualified.
Max Wistow.
I've met with him a couple of times, and he's shared some information with me. I do think there's at least a colorable case there, and I think that eventually, if it gets past the motion to dismiss stage, that's where it is right now, that if it gets to a jury, that there will be a verdict.
Would the civil lawsuit have been undermined had the General Assembly not moved this year to include money for paying back the 38 Studios bondholders?
The simple answer is yes, because the $2.5 million now becomes the debt of the EDC to the state, so it helps the plaintiffs in their case prove damages. So that's one element of damages.
And taxpayers remain on the hook for about $90 million. What amount of that do you think might potentially be recovered through a lawsuit?
Oh, I think all of it eventually. If they prove their case, I mean that would be something that they could recoup 100% of.
You don't expect this to go to a jury, though, do you?
I suspect that once we get farther along, that there'll probably be some very serious settlement talks. Most cases settle.
The signal accomplishment this year of the General Assembly was approving same-sex marriage. Some critics believe the General Assembly hasn't really done much beyond that. How do you respond?
That was certainly a big issue that has been hanging around for a long time. So that was an important thing to get off our calendar. But we've now passed the budget. We're moving forward in economic development to try to revamp the EDC. So there are other things going on. And, of course, oversight is meeting for the first time in 2 years.
You know what I'm interested in is the way that tax policy seems to be set willy-nilly at the State House without comprehensive studies or views. A good example, we're just going to take the liquor tax off. So the liquor stores along the east side of the bay, along the Massachusetts border, will get a tax break. Is that really economic development? Is that wise taxing?
Well, it's a good question. We heard from those people and indicating that they were losing business from Massachusetts. I think there were some studies done that show that there was a drop-off in revenue. The original bill was, that bill is actually sunsetted. So I think after 18 months, we'll actually be able to look at the data and determine whether or not restoring those taxes is a good idea. I'm very, very supportive of such sunset legislation. I think we need to do more of that. So it gives an opportunity to not only see how it affects, but let's look at the data once it's done.
But is there a way to look at comprehensively at our taxes, particularly as they relate and compete with Massachusetts, where most of the population north of the Appanagh-Dixon line is, and of course Connecticut, where we have a border with Connecticut, but there's not as many people and businesses along that border as there is with the Bay State.
Yes, but there, and I think we do. I mean, we've lowered the state income tax to try to be a little more in line with Massachusetts. I think we're at 5.599. I think Massachusetts may be a little lower. Those are all kind of things that we do look at, and you know, we're always competing with those two states. So I do think there's a comprehensive. Let's face it, we have not raised income taxes in the state for at least the last 5 years.
Wouldn't it be smart to take another look at the sales tax, something that Governor Chafee actually, when he first came into office, talked about lowering the top and extending out the base to things that are now exempt?
I think that would be a good thing to bring back up to look at. I think when he first proposed it, I think it was so broad and so wide that it got people kind of upset. But I do think this legitimate looking at it, lowering and broadening to other items.
There's some speculation about the future of House Speaker Gordon Fox. He's seen as a possible candidate for mayor of Providence. He could also, of course, try to retain the most powerful position in Rhode Island politics. What do you expect him to do? Do you expect him to seek re-election to his state rep seat?
That's really a question for him. I would expect that he would probably seek re-election, yes.
And we have also got what's expected to be a spirited Democratic primary for governor next year with Governor Chafee and expected candidates Gina Raimondo and Angel Taveras. Who do you like for governor next year?
Well, I like all three of them. I'm not going to commit to any one candidate. They're all very capable people, but it's going to be a rough ride in that primary, no question about it.
If you were a philosopher king, what is the one or two things that you would do to try to make the end of our General Assembly sessions a little more orderly?
Huh. What would I do? I would try to get some of the more controversial bills done earlier. I think that would be helpful. One thing I would absolutely do, this nonsense of what we do is duplicate bills. We have a House bill and a Senate bill, the same bill. So when you hear that we passed 300 bills at the last minute, we're really passing 150 because the other half are duplicate. I don't know. When I learned civics is you have one bill that passes the House, the same bill goes to the Senate, and they pass it on. But for some reason, we've got this crazy system of duplicate bills. So the House has to pass the Senate bill, the Senate has to pass the House bill, and then they both go to the governor. I think it's a waste of time.
Well, now, wouldn't people have to check their egos at the door for that to happen?
They would, but I think we would get out of there a lot sooner.
We're talking here with State Representative Michael Marcello, chairman of the House Oversight Committee. Rep, as we know, there's been no shortage of scandal in Rhode Island history, and we have a number of quasi-public agencies that don't always have adequate oversight. What needs to be done to have an adequate level of oversight and internal checks in state government beyond the House Oversight Committee?
Well, obviously the audit that these individual agencies submit is a starting point, but I do think that the General Assembly has a role, since we established these quasis, has a role in overseeing these on a regular basis, and also I think sunsetting some of these would be a good idea as well.
And beyond your earlier answer to Scott's question about how to improve the legislative process, do you see internal reforms that could improve the legislative approach?
Yes, I think we've come a long way in making the system more electronic, and that's been helpful a lot. We now have ability to track bills online, so you can actually get an email as your bill makes it through the system. I think that's a very big improvement. We do spend a lot of money on paper up there, though. I think we're moving in the right direction, but we need to get there more.
Away from the dead trees and into the digital age?
Exactly.
I'm wondering, though, we look at bridges, and there's been so much talk because of the rebellion, of course, with the East Bay lawmakers this session, about tolls on the Saconic River Bridge. Do you favor the user fee concept of people who use the bridge, i.e. drive over it every day, paying for the upkeep and construction of these bridges? Or should this be a responsibility of all Rhode Island taxpayers, making sure that people on Block Island and Burrillville also contribute to the Saconic River Bridge?
I think it has to be a combination approach. We are the ocean state. We certainly benefit. I live in Scituate, haven't been over the Saconic Bridge in probably 6 months. We all benefit by that part of the state. It's beautiful, tourists. I think it has to be a combination of tolls and sharing the burden, because again, we are the ocean state. We all benefit from that. So I agree. We have to get away from this notion that we can have these bridges and these roads, but we don't have to pay for them. We've got to get away from that. And frankly, if we want good roads, we want good bridges, we have to pay for them.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch when it comes to infrastructure, is there?
Absolutely not.
One of your former colleagues, a former Republican representative, Dan Riley, says this legislative study commission is loaded with people who have a stated preference for tolling. How do you respond to that?
You know what? I think we do have to let the commission do their job. They're going to take testimony. They're going to have hearings. And I don't believe any kind of preconceived notions would have an effect. They're going to try to be objective as
possible. Do you think people in East Bay have been given enough public input on the bridge situation?
I think the people in East Bay, a majority of them, don't want any tolls. And I don't know how much public input is going to help change their mind. But I think if we step back and look at this objectively and look at the facts, and if they have a feeling that the burden is going to be shared both at the state level and the local level. But I'm not sure that we can do anything to convince them that that tolls are necessary.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Happy 4th to everyone.
And State Representative Michael Marcello, chairman of the House Oversight Committee.
Great to be here. Happy 4th, everyone.
Happy 4th, and thanks for tuning in.